Damn your stinking luck, Joe Fox. How the hell did you get on my trail? Well, it don't make no difference now. This is as far as he's going.
Starbo crawled over to the other side of the boulder he had used as a shield in hopes of getting a clear shot.
Son of a bitch.
He was gripped by a moment of panic when he could no longer see where he was.
No. What? Son of a bitch, is like a damn snake in the bushes.
He should have been more patient and waited until the relentless hunter had ridden out into the center of the clearing. But as soon as he had seen the head of the pained horse emerge from the bushes by the stream, he'd pulled the trigger. And now the dangerous half-breed had escaped into the tall pines. He strained to scan the trees below the ridge. As yet, there'd been no return fire from Joe Fox, which meant he had not spotted Starbo behind the boulder. Or did it? Starbo had to consider the possibility that he had been spotted and Joe Fox was stalking him, maybe making his way up the ridge even now.
Let the half-breed come. It'll be his day to go to hell.
But Starbo was anxiously aware of the nervous sweating in the palms of his hands.
Damn him!
At that moment, Joe's black pack horse walked slowly across the clearing below. He wasted no time after firing the shots, and he ran up the ridge to where his horse was tied. His rational mind tried to reason that it was impossible for the relentless hunter to have climbed the other side of the slope in the time he had taken to flee. Even so, he could feel a tingle in the center of his shoulder blades where a bullet might find him at any second. Starbo didn't let up on his weary horse until he reached the bottom of the mountain, where he was sure he had put enough distance between him to rest it. With his confidence partially restored, he convinced himself that he had taken the sensible route.
If it was a fight in the open, that'd be a different thing. That bastard is as much at home in the woods as a wolf.
He consoled himself on his decision to run.
Yeah, it's a smart thing to do. And Max Starbo ain't never been no damn dummy. He'll play hell catching up to me on foot.
His mind completely at ease now, with the sure feeling that he had seen the last of Joe Fox. He walked his horse toward a narrow canyon between the two mountains facing him. Separated from his prey by a mountain, Joe was of another thought. The hunt was not over, merely delayed. He recognized the difficulty of catching a man on horseback while he traveled on foot, but there was no doubt in his mind that he would eventually track Starbo down. Joe had never located Starbo's position on the ridge until after his pack horse was shot, but he managed to get a glimpse of his horse as it crashed through the pines, heading for the shoulder of the mountain. By that time, the range was too far to waste a cartridge hoping for a lucky shot. He was certain that he was no longer in danger of getting shot himself. And to prove it, he walked out into the opening to fetch the few things from his saddlebags he would need to take with him. With a mind to travel as light as possible, he made a backpack with his blanket and filled it with cartridges, jerky, flint and steel, and after some deliberation, his coffee pot. Pausing then to take one last sorrowful look at the faithful paint pony. He strapped his bow and quiver on his shoulder, picked up his rifle, and started up the slope of the ridge toward the spot where he had last glimpsed Starbo. Reaching the boulder that had been Starbo's shield, he paused only for a second to notice the empty .44 shells lying on the ground before proceeding on toward the spot in the trees where he thought he had seen the fleeing man's horse. He reached the place where the bushwhacker had tied his horse, and from that point on, there was little trouble to follow the trail up toward the shoulder of the mountain. There were no more sorrowful thoughts over the loss of his horse. His life had been in kinship with the wild creatures of the mountains, where death was but a part of living and something to be expected, often in random acts of fate. so he was not prone to waste time regretting bad luck. He was on foot, his enemy was on horseback, and it would take a little more time to track him, but track him he would. He pulled his bow off his shoulder, and with it in one hand and his rifle in the other, he set out at a steady jog. Like a man possessed, Starbo drove his horse relentlessly, not certain of his way, but with the thought that the town of Helena was somewhere to his north. Finally, when he reached a river that seemed to have carved its way between two steep mountains, he was forced to rest his weary horse for fear that he would otherwise be on foot. He was about to pick a place to camp when a flicker of light through the trees ahead caught his eye. He pulled his rifle out. The prospect of riding up on a party of Indians didn't appeal to him at the present time. He decided to proceed on foot until he could determine just who he had happened upon. Rounding a bend of the river, he saw the campfire, and he stopped to assess the situation before making his presence known. It looked like two men, white men, as he had hoped. One of them was sitting beside the fire.
Hello to the camp!
Both men scrambled to reach for weapons.
Saw your fire! I was hoping that was coffee I smelled. Ain't nobody but me. Didn't mean to scare you.
Well, come on in a little closer so we can get a look at you.
Starbo advanced closer.
Well, let me tell you, I'm mighty glad to see you boys. I ain't ashamed to tell you I'm as lost as a whore in church.
He glanced around the camp, noticing the packs and tools near the fire and the horse hobbled near the river.
My name is Starbo. I'm on my way to Helena, but I reckon I got off the trail somewhere back yonder.
Well, Starbo, come on in. There's a little coffee left in that pot. My name's Barney Cox. He's Will Forney.
Forney nodded, and they both looked the big man over as he led his horse into the firelight.
You can put that horse over by iron if you want. He looks pretty wore out.
Oh, he is wore out. I got jumped by some Injuns about 10, 12 miles back that way. Had to run for it.
Injuns? We ain't seen no Injuns around this part of the river since we've been here, and there ain't been no talk of any. Awful close to Helena. Most of the Flatheads has moved further north. Ain't that right, Will?
That's right. I don't reckon you've it, have you?
Oh, well, for a fact, I ain't. But I wouldn't put you boys out. I got some bacon in my packs. I just appreciate borrowing some of your fire to cook it. I maybe cook a little extra if you fellas are still hungry.
No need to get your grub out. We ain't put our salt pork away yet, and the pan's still on the edge of the fire. You go ahead and take care of the horse.
Well, that's mighty neighborly of you.
Starbo led his horse over to the riverbank with the others.
What do you think, Barney?
I don't know. I reckon he's all right. He's a big son of a bitch, though, ain't he? Sure is hard on his horse.
You say you're heading to Helena?
That's fact. First light, I'll be on my way.
Well, if you're gonna keep following this river, you ain't never gonna get to Helena.
Well, I told you I was lost. I ain't never been there before, and I was guessing that this river might run toward it.
What you need to do is ride up this river about 2 miles till you strike a cross canyon. Follow that canyon north. It'll lead to a valley, and you take that right to Helena. But you're still 2 good days away.
Well, I tell you, I do appreciate your help. I feel like I ought to pay you boys a little something for all your help.
No such thing. Glad we could help.
You know, I got a bottle of good rye whiskey in my pack. You know, maybe you fellas would like a drink.
Well, now, that don't sound like such a bad idea.
The dregs of coffee in the tin cups were replaced with generous shots of whiskey. A little more in the two partners' cups than Starbo poured for himself. The talk got more and more casual as the level of whiskey in the bottle dropped.
So, what are you two boys doing out this way?
Nothing. We're just doing some hunting.
Oh, yeah, well, I seen them picks and shovels over by your pack. What was you hunting? Gophers?
We're going after elk. We always carry some tools with us just in case we need to dig a cave in the riverbank and cache the meat.
Oh. Yeah, well, you know, it don't make no difference to me, but, well, it looks like you ain't been too lucky too far, or you wouldn't be eating pork.
Oh, I reckon that's right.
At Starbo's insistence, they finished the bottle.
Well, I'm turning in. I think I drank too much.
You ain't the only one. Oh, whoa.
Before taking notice of the picks and shovels, Starbo might have been content to just pass the night with the two partners, partake of their generosity, and get directions to Helena. But in his mind, the tools meant digging in the ground for something far more interesting than making a hole to cache meat. With the money he stole from Bradley Lindstrom and the $3,500 he had just netted in the bank holdup, he felt he was on a definite winning streak. These boys were hiding something. He felt real sure about that. He figured it was not by chance that they were camped where a fairly busy stream emptied into a river, and he was betting a bottle of good rye whiskey that there was a sluice box not far up that stream. Starbo crawled out of his blanket and went to the packs, pausing only a moment to peer down at the sleeping men. He then proceeded to tear open all the packs lying off to one side of the fire. Strewing clothes and utensils about him, he emptied them, finding two small pouches of gold dust. Estimating the two were equally weighted, it was easy to assume that these pouches represented the equal split between the partners. It wasn't much, about $50 he estimated, unless the pouches were just for show and the real haul was hidden somewhere else. That made sense to Starbo, and he was determined to find the stash. He pulled the flaming piece of firewood from the fire to use as a torch and looked around the camp, trying to spot something, a rock, a log, something out of place that might signal a hiding place. He gave up after a few minutes, finding it impossible in the dark. Their gold cache could be any place, in the camp, in the river, the stream. He decided to quit wasting his time. Returning to stand over the sleeping men again, he gazed down at them, making a decision. After a second, he decided that Barney would be the most likely to talk. So he straddled Will and bent low over him, tapping him lightly on his head with the barrel of his pistol. Stricken dumb with horrible paralysis at first, Will started to react, but he was too slow. Starbo leapt over then to straddle Barney. Starbo settled his massive weight upon his chest, pushing the air from his lungs.
Wake up, sleepyhead. You got some talking to do.
I'll be damned. Get the hell off of me.
Where's dust?
There ain't no dust. I swear to God there ain't.
Oh, now, Barney, you ain't showing a hell of a lot of sense. Now, I'll tell you what I'll do. Hell, I ain't a greedy man. I'll just take Will's half of the dust and go on my way. You'd be just as rich as you would have been. It'd be just me and you partners instead of you and Will. You do that, I wouldn't have no reason to kill you. What do you say, partner?
All right. I'll show you if you promise you won't kill me.
Oh, hell yes, I promise.
He released him then and picked up Barney's rifle.
Now, you won't mind if I hold on to both rifles till I get my gold, will you? Well, this might be the best partnership you was ever in. We might just want to team up permanently.
Barney got to his feet, desperately trying to see some way out of his situation. as he dutifully led Starbo to a boulder the size of a haystack that protruded out over the edge of the water. His hands wouldn't stop shaking, and there seemed to be no feeling at all in his legs below his knees. Though he tried as hard as he could to think of some salvation, nothing presented itself except simply running for his life after he showed Starbo the gold. Maybe the menacing brute would be satisfied and let him live. A cold numbness spread up his fingertips and into his arms as he pointed to a spot at the base of the boulder.
There!
We'll dig it out of there, man. Let's see how well you boys was doing.
I need a shovel.
Now that ground don't look too hard to me right there. I expect you can dig that out with your hands. Besides, you get hold of a shovel, you might start getting crazy ideas like taking a swing at me. Now let's get at it.
Barney's hopes sank even deeper. Using a shovel as a weapon was the only plan he could think of in this desperate moment. With Starbo's rifle leveled at him, he dropped to his knees and began raking away the loose dirt with his hands. After only a matter of 10 minutes or so, he uncovered a pouch that appeared to be considerably heavier than those found in the packs.
Oh, well, hot damn. Let me see that.
Seeing this was his only chance to escape with his life, Barney tossed the pouch toward the edge of the bank. When Starbo quickly reacted and jumped to keep the pouch from falling in the river, Barney scrambled up from beside the boulder and ran for the woods. Starbo snatched the pouch from the edge of the bank, then calmly turned. Without even bothering to confirm Barney's death, Starbo went to the packs and picked up a shovel, then returned to dig in the hole Barney had already started. He immediately uncovered a pouch similar to the first, and he kept digging. Soon, he was digging in solid dirt and roots, and he knew the two pouches were all there were.
I reckon that's all the elk meat there is in that there cache.
Since there were still several hours until sunup, he took his new treasure over by the fire to examine it. What had started out as a questionable day had turned out to be a great one. He had no idea how much his newly gained gold was worth, but he estimated that it was considerable. He was a wealthy man. In addition to this fact was the accumulation of 2 extra horses to sell and the satisfaction that he had left Joe Fox far behind him. By the time the bothersome tracker reached Helena, if he followed him that far, Starbo would be long gone, too long to leave a trail. After retying the gold pouches, he searched the bodies, starting with that of Will Forney. He found nothing of value. When he went to search Barney's body, he found the man still alive, although paralyzed from a bullet in his spine. He rolled him over.
Oh, damn! You ain't dead yet?
Kill me. Please. Kill me.
You'll die before too long. There ain't no sense in wasting another cartridge.
Maintaining a steady pace between walking and running, Joe Fox, the adopted son of a Blackfoot warrior, tirelessly ground out mile after mile, efficiently utilizing the combination of strength and willpower that resulted from years of roaming the highest mountains in the Rockies. He constantly gained on his prey. As he scaled the steep slopes and made his way through forest thick with fir and spruce, he seldom stopped for rest, and only occasionally for food. Such was the determination of Joe Fox. In mountainous country, he never conceded advantage to a man on horseback, knowing that the horse required longer rest periods than he. Once he reached the valley where Starbo had followed the river, however, he grudgingly surrendered the advantage to the horse. To make up for it, Once it appeared that Starbow was going to continue to follow the river, he pushed on after nightfall, even though it meant he'd be unable to read sign. He didn't know if Starbow really knew where he was going or not, but he figured he could stay with the river for a long time before he reached a cross canyon where he'd be forced to wait for daylight to see if Starbow turned north to Helena or continued following the river. Daylight found him still some 2 miles or more from the cross canyon, but prints he discovered along the riverbank told him that he was still on Starbow's trail. Rounding a bend in the river, he thought he detected a smell of smoke. Slipping his bow back on his shoulder in order to use both hands on his rifle, he moved cautiously forward, alert for an ambush. It seemed unlikely that Starbow would have lingered in this place, but Joe could now see that there was a camp of some sort a few hundred feet ahead. Moving even closer, he saw the source of the smoke on the wind, the dying ashes of a fire, but there was no one about and no horse that he could see. Then he noticed what appeared to be someone sleeping on the far side of the smoking coals. He knelt where he was for a while, watching for someone else to enter the scene. While he waited, he noticed the open packs and clothing and supplies scattered upon the ground. Someone had evidently raided the camp, and Joe might be waiting for a corpse to move. He rose to his feet, and with his rifle ready to fire, walked slowly into the abandoned camp. As he had suspected, the man was dead, shot in the face at point-blank range.
Looks like some of Starbow's work.
Planning only a quick look around, he spotted another body beyond a huge boulder by the river's edge. This one was lying in a puddle of blood, and Joe was about to turn away when the eyelids flickered open.
Finish me off.
Surprised, Joe knelt beside the man to do what he could for him, but he discovered right away that there was no hope for the unfortunate soul as the pitiable eyes searched his.
Kill me.
Joe knew there was no use in speaking words of encouragement. The wounded man knew there was no hope for him, and he was just taking a painfully long time to die.
Who did this? Starbow?
The man nodded painfully.
You know where he's headed?
Helena. Finish it.
Understanding, Joe nodded solemnly in response.
God bless you.
Rising to his feet, Joe moved behind him so he could not see the pistol when he pulled it from his belt. Joe glanced up to see a couple of buzzards already starting to circle. Wasting no more time, he kicked some dirt on the smoldering campfire and started back on Starbow's trail, knowing that he was now less than half a day behind the murderer. Departing the camp, he found the trail was even easier to follow, for Starbow now had 4 horses leaving tracks. Joe's earnest desire was to overtake the cruel killer before he reached the city of Helena. The thought of his frustration when trying to make sense of that many buildings and people in Butte was still fresh in his mind. His experience in the bustling city also showed him that his appearance prohibited him from moving about unnoticed. In view of these factors, Joe decided to gamble on the accuracy of Barney Cox's statement that Helena was Starbow's destination. Instead of continuing to follow Starbow's tracks upriver to the Cross Canyon, he decided to strike out across the mountains with the hope of cutting the killer off before he reached the broad valley in Helena. He took the first opportunity he came upon to ford the river, and then made his way once again up through the lodgepole pines. He used a distant peak as his point of reference, pushing even harder than he had before coming upon the 2 miners. gliding doggedly along the many trails. He chewed a strip of deer jerky when he was hungry, while still maintaining his pace. Moving with the soft tread of a mountain lion, he emerged from a stand of spruce trees near the top of a high ridge to startle a buck and two does nibbling at some low plants at the edge of a high meadow. As they bolted away into the forest, he never bothered to think about what an easy shot it would have been for fresh meat. Thoughts of Callie lay heavy on his mind, ever increasing the closer he came to overtaking the brute that caused her so much pain and shame. He would always carry the guilt that none of Callie's torment would have happened if he'd killed Starbo when he first had the chance. The frightened deer that had just bolted caused him to remember the look in Callie's eyes when she had turned to leave his camp on that last night. She'd be on her way to the Oregon country now. Hopefully, she'd be able to forget this terrible period of her life. Had he thought it appropriate, he might have told her that he would always carry her in his heart. He couldn't help her to forget, but he could erase the monster that had defiled her from the face of the earth. He had hunted and killed before, man and beast, but he had never before felt the fire in his veins like this, except once before, when he rode against the Crows to avenge the deaths of his mother and father. Starbo squinted his eyes against the afternoon sun in an effort to get a better look at the house ahead. Built on a gentle rise beside a creek, it was the first sign of civilization he had come to in the wide valley. He smiled, feeling satisfied that Helena couldn't be far away now. It'd be a good time to rest and water his horse, and maybe even get a hot meal for himself. He took a long look at the little frame house and the barn and corral behind it. It had the look of a well-run farm. The house was painted, and the barn was in good repair. He suddenly took a new interest in the farm when he spied a young girl of about 13 or 14 walking from the barn to the house.
Good day to you, little miss. I just watered my horse in the creek. If your pa don't mind, let him rest a spell before I go on to Helena.
Pa won't mind.
Starbo stepped down from the saddle and walked closer to the house while the horses drank.
That's mighty neighborly of you. Is your daddy in the house?
No, sir. He took the wagon into town for supplies.
Is that a fact?
Before he could ask any more questions, the door opened and a woman came out on the porch.
If you're looking for my husband, he won't be back for a couple of hours or so. You must be the man he was talking to about the horse. He wasn't expecting you until tomorrow.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I reckon one of us must have got our days mixed up.
Starbo glanced at the girl and winked, wondering whether she remembered that he had told her he was just stopping to rest before going on to Helena. She expressed nothing more than a slight frown of confusion.
Well, I sure hated that I missed him.
Me too. I know he's needing a couple of horses. He'll hate it he missed you. Would you like to sit on the porch for a while and have a cup of coffee? I've got some cold buttermilk Janie can fetch from the creek. I ain't started supper yet, but there's some cold biscuits left from dinner.
Why, thank you, ma'am. That sure would set good right now. I ain't had much but salt pork lately.
He stepped up on the porch to tower over the woman, his eyes roaming over her from head to toe. Mary Lester looked not a lot different from thousands of frontier women. Overworked and prematurely gray, her eyes reflecting the weary look of hard summers and cold winters. If she had been the only choice, he would have been interested. But since she was not, Starbo decided he preferred the daughter. He turned to glance at the young girl as she walked down to the creek to fetch the buttermilk from the spring box.
I don't want to waste your time, mister. I'm sure Paul will come to see you tomorrow.
Ain't nobody else here. It's just you and the girl?
Well, not right this moment, but we have a couple of neighbor men that help out. ought to be here at any minute.
Well, I ain't in no hurry. Maybe I'll wait till your hired hands get here. Oh, maybe they'll want to look at them horses.
Starbo went over to the two chairs at the end of the porch and sat down.
That buttermilk ought to taste real good.
I'll go in and see about the coffee.
Janie returned from the creek carrying a large gallon jug.
I'll help Mama.
You do that.
She went directly into the house. Inside, her mother was lifting the shotgun down from the fireplace and almost dropped it when Janie walked in.
Mom, what's wrong?
I don't know. I just wish your daddy was here.
Mama, when he rode up, he said he just wanted to rest his horse and then he was going on to Helena. He didn't say anything about coming to see Dad.
Trying hard to control her feeling of panic, Mary propped the shotgun against the kitchen chair.
Let's just give him some of that buttermilk and a couple of biscuits, and maybe he'll get out of here.
I hope you wasn't going to make coffee with that shotgun.
The voice came from the open doorway. Starbo stepped inside and stood leering at the two captive females. Not sure how much he had heard before he walked in, Mary tried to pull her shattered nerves together.
I was just getting it out of my way.
She snatched the jug of buttermilk from her daughter.
Janie, run out to the barn and see if we've got any fresh eggs. I'll pour a cup of buttermilk for our guest.
She poured a cup of the milk, spilling a good portion as she tried to steady her trembling hand. Her daughter hesitated, confused by her mother's instructions.
Go on, child, do as I told you.
Impassioned by the naked fear in the woman's eyes, Starbo, his evil grin a constant fixture now, took a step to block the girl's way.
Well, I bet you already fetched them eggs this morning, didn't you, little gal?
He grabbed her arm and pulled her with him to the table.
You stay here with me and your mama, and we'll have us a time like you ain't never seen before.
Still holding Janie by the arm, he picked up the cup of buttermilk and drained the whole thing.
Ain't much better than a cold cup of buttermilk. But I know something better. Ain't that right, Mama?
Desperate, Mary grabbed for the shotgun, but Starbo kicked it out of her reach, and with his free hand, he clutched her around the throat. With mother and daughter trapped in steel-like grips, he backed Mary up against the kitchen wall, dragging Janie along with him. Clamping down tighter and tighter on the entrapped woman's throat, he grinned in her face as she fought for air. Suddenly, Starbo released her. An arrow protruded from his back. Mary slid down the wall to collapse on the floor. Another arrow pierced his belly. Confused and in excruciating pain, Starbo didn't resist when Janie pulled free of his grasp. Clutching a chair to keep from falling, he turned to face the avenging spirit standing in the doorway, the bowstring fully drawn.
Joe Fox.
Only then, realizing what had happened to him, he looked down in shock at the deadly shaft buried in his gut. And his fear of the unknown seized his terrified mind. Suddenly, he fell to the floor, pulling the chair over on top of himself. Still terrified, unsure what her fate was now at the hands of this new demon, Janie ran to her mother's side, while Joe Fox grabbed Starbo's ankles and dragged the huge corpse out the front door, across the porch, and off on the ground. Then he went back inside to check on Mary Lester. He found her sitting up with her back against the wall, her daughter by her side.
Are you all right, ma'am?
It was a few moments more before she was able to get up with the help of Joe and her daughter and sit in the chair.
Who was that monster?
He's the devil, ma'am. And I've been chasing him for a long time. As soon as I round up these horses, I'll drag him away from here.
Joe waited while she and Janie explained that they thought he was a man who was supposed to bring two horses for her husband. Joe politely remained until they had finished relating the entire incident, even though he was eager to be on his way. Finally, he took his leave.
Hold it right there! You take another step and I'll blow your head off!
Joe had little choice but to stop. The man holding the rifle aimed at his head looked determined enough to do as he had threatened.
No, Paul, he saved our lives!
Baffled by the scene that had met him when he returned from town, Paul Lester was at least relieved to see his wife and daughter safe.
What the hell happened here? Who's that?
Paul indicated Starbo's body.
That's the devil. And he was gonna kill Mama and me till that man came along.
Janie pointed at Joe. Joe waited again through the relating of the incident, and longer, since Paul pressed for a more detailed account of who Starbo had been.
I reckon I might ought to go tell the sheriff about it.
I wouldn't bother. Just dump him in the ground somewhere. Ain't nobody gonna come looking for Starbo. Your wife said you need two horses, so I'm leaving two of those by the creek. I'm taking the other two since he killed my two horses, and I'm taking the stuff in those packs. It's stuff stole from some other folks.
Mister, I don't know how I can ever thank you enough for saving my family.
I'm just glad I got here when I did.
God bless you, Joe Fox.
Thank you, ma'am.
It was the second time in as many days that he had been blessed. Once for taking a life, and once for saving two. It was good to be in the mountains again, with no sense of urgency to get any place. He still had tasks to perform, but he decided he would do them at his leisure. He took time to hunt and time to dry the meat. He had plenty of cartridges, thanks to Starbo's packs, but he still hunted with his bow to conserve his supply of ammunition. He felt that he was home again, alone again, where he was before he encountered Malcolm Lindstrom and Pete Watson. It seemed a longer time ago than the few months it had been. He still thought about Callie and hoped that she had managed to put her ordeal behind her. He would continue to think about her for a while, but like everything else in the mountains, those thoughts would fade with the seasons. Sheriff Lon Pedersen sat at his desk reading the newspaper. His deputy, Jim Blackburn, stood looking out the front window, 1 foot propped on a wooden cartridge box. Things were back to normal in the sheriff's office, although Jim suspected that Pedersen still left most of the blame for the bank robbery and murder of Wallace Tolbert at his feet. A posse had scoured the mountains all around Butte with no results, until they finally admitted it useless to continue. Jim argued that there was little he could have done to prevent the holdup, and his best tracker came up empty on finding a trail to follow. He figured Pedersen was equally to blame for having gone fishing, although he didn't voice that one to his boss.
Well, I'll be damned.
Blackburn saw a rider leading a pack horse pull up to the hitching post outside and dismount.
Is that crazy son of a bitch that looks like a wild Injun? I told you about him. Came riding through town scaring the hell out of everybody.
This garnered Pedersen's interest, and the sheriff put down his paper, got up, and came to the window.
The only reason I didn't lock him up was a feller came running down the street hollering about bank being robbed and Tolbert shot. I didn't have time to mess with no fool half-breed or whatever he is.
Do you figure he had anything to do with the holdup?
I don't see how he could. Like I said, he was talking to me when it happened.
Well, let's see what he wants.
The sheriff went to the door and opened it just as Joe Fox was untying a large cotton sack from one of the packs.
You didn't learn much last time you came through this town, did you? You're lucky I didn't lock you up then.
Joe didn't answer right away. He just gazed at Blackburn for a few seconds, as if deciding whether or not to bother. He finished untying the sack before speaking.
You the sheriff?
That's right.
I got something here to give you.
All right, come on inside.
All the same to you, I'll just give it to you out here. Your folks are too quick to want to put people in jail and not let them out.
Holding his rifle in one hand, he tossed the sack on the steps.
That's all my business here. I'll be going now.
Wait a minute, what's in it?
The money Starbo stole from the bank.
The hell you say?
Pedersen reached for the sack and peered inside.
Is it all there?
I don't know.
How much is in here?
I don't know.
You don't know? Didn't you count it?
Nope.
Why?
Because it didn't belong to me, so it didn't make any difference how much there was.
Where's the man who stole it? What'd you say his name was?
Starbo. He's dead.
It was obvious that the sheriff wanted more details than Joe was inclined to offer, but the adopted son of a Blackfoot warrior was eager to leave the busy town and return to the mountains. He didn't feel it necessary to explain that he had not counted the entire sack of money, but had counted out $250 that he felt belonged to Callie's people in the mule train. He was not certain there would ever be an opportunity to return their money, but he would hold it for him in case he decided to see the Oregon country for himself. There was also the matter of the sacks of gold dust he assumed had been stolen from the two miners Starbo killed. He hadn't decided what to do about that yet. He grabbed the saddle horn with one hand and, with his rifle in the other, stepped up in the saddle.
Hey! Hold on there!
Let him go. Hell, he didn't rob the bank. I don't think we'll see him around here again.
Grace Templeton stood in the door of her husband's store, watching the slender young woman outside bending over a large iron pot, stirring the clothes with a paddle. After a few moments, Grace turned to her husband.
Horace, I think this is a mistake.
What is?
Letting that child stay here with us. Every time I look at her, it breaks my heart.
Well, I don't know. She's a good worker, and she sure don't eat much. I didn't think she was all that much trouble.
I declare, Horace, you don't even know what I'm talking about, do you?
For a fact, Horace didn't know what his wife was complaining about. The young lady really wasn't much trouble. She seemed content to live in a corner of the back storeroom, and she was a genuine help with the chores. Besides, what choice did a Christian family have? She refused to go on to Oregon with her family, and they were about to give up their dream of finding a new place with friends and family already waiting for them until Grace said Callie could stay with them. Luke and Jenny Preston, the only family from the congregation that had decided to settle in the Missoula Valley, had extended an invitation to the girl to stay with them, but Callie declined, saying she would work for a room and board with the Templetons. The two Flynn brothers had volunteered to stay to help Preston build his cabin, planning to rejoin the congregation in Oregon when the cabin was finished.
Seems to me everything worked out all right. Callie's getting along just fine as far as I can see.
I declare, you really can't see what's happening right before your eyes, can you?
What?
She is dying of a broken heart. Maybe not so much as you'd notice right away. But she's telling herself that he's gonna come for her one day.
Who?
Oh, Joe Fox, that's who. The poor child hides that pitiful, scarred-up face from everybody that comes around here, taking those long walks by the river at night. And it hasn't been that long since those Indians raided this place.
You think she's really waiting for Joe Fox? Hell, Joe Fox is somewhere so far back in the mountains, I doubt we'll ever see him around these parts again.
And that's why that poor child is dying of a broken heart.
Well, I reckon she's welcome to stay here as long as she wants.
She's too young to be giving up on her life. The best thing for her is to go back to her folks. I'm going to talk to her about it. Luke Preston has almost finished his cabin, so the two Flynn boys will be heading to Oregon pretty soon. Maybe I can persuade Callie to go with them. She needs family, and we can't give her that.
As if sensing that she was the subject of someone's conversation, Callie paused and straightened up to ease the strain on her back. She had, in fact, stopped turning away from the stares of strangers and regulars alike who came to the trading post. She had learned to ignore the pitying stares as well as the rude, curious gawks, and she kept her head held high. She could have told Grace that although she watched the Valley Road every day for Joe's return, she didn't expect it. They had said their goodbyes and gone their separate ways. The hardest part had been trying to explain to her mother and father why she just couldn't go to Oregon with them. She felt that if she remained with the congregation, the stigma of her brutal assault would go with her, forever alive in their minds. Here in this valley, she was just the woman with the scarred face. She knew that she could not stay with the Templetons forever. But maybe God would show her a sign before long, and she would know then what to do. The evenings were getting warm enough now to be quite pleasant for a walk along the river. Taking a light wrap for her shoulders, Callie left the house behind the trading post and turned away from the valley road. In a melancholy sense of mind, she decided to walk down by the old line of caves where she and her family had spent the winter. It had been some time now since she had visited the caves. Horace had warned her that there was no telling what manner of vermin or animals might have taken up residence there since they were vacated, but she wasn't concerned. Walking down the line of dark holes in the bluffs, she counted the openings until she came to her family's cave. She stood staring into the dark entrance for a long time, thoughts of a happier time filling her mind. Remembering a night that seemed long, long ago, she climbed over the top of the cave and stood gazing out toward the stand of cottonwoods across the clearing where he had made his camp. There was nothing there now but the lonely darkness. She closed her eyes and pictured him, dressed in animal skins, his hair in two long braids like an Indian, tall and straight as he walked toward her with long, fluid strides. It brought a smile to her face. She opened her eyes to find the vision still in her mind. Blinking rapidly to clear her senses, she thought at first that she was dreaming. Then, her eyes began to fill with tears of joy, for she realized that it was no dream. It was him, striding toward her, leading the two horses behind him. She didn't wait any longer, but ran to him, desperate to capture the dream before it could fade away. He caught her in his arms and kissed her scarred face again and again while she clung to him as if afraid he might slip away.
I've come to take you home. Our home. That is, if you'll have me.
I'll live anywhere as long as it's with you, Joe Fox. Even if it's in a tent.
He thought of the sacks of gold dust in his saddlebags.
I think we'll do a little better than that.
How did you know I'd wait for you here?
I didn't. I was on my way to Oregon.
The Blackfoot Trail is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2009, Charles G. West. Published by arrangement with NAL Signet, a member of Penguin Group USA Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, David Harris, Michael Glenn, Kimberly Gilbert, Bradley Smith, Terrence Aselford, Eric Mesner, Evan Casey, Joe Brack, Thomas Keegan, Colleen Delaney, Lily Beacon, Tim Getman, James Lewis, Patrick Bussick, Sherry Berg, Tim Pabon, Christopher Graybill, Christopher Sheeran, Scott McCormick, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Ren Casey, Nanette Savard, and Richard Rowe. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Thomas Hogan and Allison Thomas. Additional music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed the Blackfoot Trail, be sure to listen to Charles G. West's Shootout at Broken Bow and William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.